Now, these men have been taken down into Egypt, actually against their will. At the same time, you'll recall that Jeremiah was warning them not to go down there, that they were making a big mistake. And so Jeremiah actually just read their minds, for this was the thing that was in their mind. And I want to drop back to chapter 42 and pick this up. Verse 13, "But if ye say, we will not dwell in this land, neither obey the voice of the Lord our God." Now that's exactly what they said, and that's the reason they went off to the land of Egypt. But now here was their thinking, and Jeremiah just brings it right out in the open and lets you look at it, saying, "No, but we will go into the land of Egypt, where we shall see no war, nor hear the sound of the trumpet, nor have hunger of bread, and there will we dwell." Now, this is the thing that they intend to do. We're going to Egypt, and they give two reasons of why they're going there. Well, they were going there because they could attain their desires, the thing that they wanted, the ambition of their life. And what was that? Well, two things. We can go there because we can have bread. We can get something to eat. And then we can also be in a place where there can be peace. And we are going there in order that we might have the supreme desire of our heart. That is, we want ease. We want bread. And they had a degenerated desire. They were lusting after this. That was the result of the disintegration and the deterioration and the dissolution of the nation, Israel, of which they was a part. And they wanted peace at any price except the price of war and hunger. Now, I've attempted to draw out of this book on two or three occasions the great principles that are illustrated here. And I have warned you before that the thing about Jeremiah that disturbs me is I know that I'm missing something. I don't quite get it all. I don't quite understand it all. I'm a little disturbed with a great many folk today, a great many Christians. They act to me like they really have all the truth. They don't need to know any more. And the closer I get to those folk, the less I find that they know. And that disturbs me, because today there's so much in the Word of God that we need to lay hold of. Now, the thing these people wanted to get away from, and this is something that's very pertinent for us in this hour, they wanted peace at any price, except at the price of war and hunger. They wanted to maintain a position of resistance, but they didn't want to resist, if you know what I mean. If they might go to a place where they no longer hear the trumpet of war, no longer have to fight, and they might have all the fullness of bread, well, that's all they desire. That's their ambition. That's what life holds for them, and that's it. May I say that, unfortunately, in our nation, there were many boys who apparently were taught a wrong philosophy of life and a philosophy like this, and they crossed over the border into Canada. They didn't want to go to war, and they wanted it easy. And that is the thing that a great many today still want. Well, may I say to you that this is something that we need to consider. And I right now ask you to follow me very carefully. And I don't want to be misunderstood. And yet I recognize I can be misunderstood here. I'm opposed to war. I'm not for war. I'm against it. But William James put it like this years ago, that what we supremely need in the life of our nation today is the moral equivalent of war. Now, I'm not defending war, but I do insist that we need today a heroic attitude of our entire soul, our entire being, and our life that stands for right, even though it may eventuate in war, rather than for that weak and beggarly and cowardly attitude which to avert war will stoop to any iniquity or compromise. Now, here is something that began back in World War I or after it. We must be ready for war in the interest of peace, and that we fought World War I to make the world safe for democracy, and World War II the same way. And we've been given the same old propaganda that today we're going to have peace in the world, and everything must be bent in that direction. May I say this to you, that I believe that this idea that we must be ready for war in order that we might have peace, and that that is the reason we should fight, is in order that we might have peace. I say to you, and I want to say it carefully now, that's a philosophy that comes out of the pit of hell. I do not think that's the position of a child of God. The important thing is that we should rest upon decisions and take a stand, not of whether it's going to be peace or war, but a question of standing for that which is right, that which is truth, and that which reveals love. If war comes, then we may expect that God will be not on the side of the big battalions, as Napoleon put it, but on the side of truth and justice and righteousness, and that today which is right. I say to you that that's the position that we ought to have today. And any other position, we surrender today our nation. That, I believe, is the important thing. It was Robert William Dale, back in World War I, he was asked the question, "Do you believe in peace at any price?" And he said, "I certainly do, sometimes at the price of war." I hope I'm not misunderstood in giving that. I think that's a profound statement, and I think it can be misunderstood. But when a nation has dropped down to the low level of perpetual panic, lest they should go to war, and will stoop to make any kind of a peace treaty, may I say to you, that's the day that that nation is doomed. That's the thing that put us in World War I. We never learned. And that is what put us in World War II. We never learned. We went to Vietnam because we didn't learn. And today we have not learned that we should stand for that which is true. Let me quote another at this point. Let me quote Dr. G. Campbell Morgan of England. "Finally, we come to that which is the most hopeless thing, corruption of conscience. All its fine sensitiveness is gone. There is no high idealism in national outlook and national thought. Or, to use the almost terrific word of the Bible, the conscience is hardened, so that there is no blanching with fear and no blushing with shame. There is cynicism instead of faith, pessimism instead of hope, and utilitarianism instead of love." Now, he goes on to quote John Stuart Mill. And it was John Stuart Mill who took that word, utilitarianism, and he formed that group of utilitarians in his day. And his definition was those who say that the greatest good of the greatest number is the true secret of all policy. And morality has nothing to do with it. Now, the philosophy today is materialism. What brings in the most money? What helps our economy? That which is totally secular. And in it today, truth does not enter at all. In fact, truth is almost a heresy, and you dare not bring love into this business affair today. You don't dare bring that in. My friend, may I say to you, when we come to that level, then I think that it's time for us to give up Christianity and say that we're going back to the jungle, and it's the law of the one with the sharpest claw and the most deadly fang, that now it's the survival indeed of the fittest. May I say to you, then we have sunk down to a very low level. That was the problem with these folk. Now Jeremiah is going to give them a series of prophecies. Here, the first prophecy is against Egypt, and we've already seen this. God says you've gone down to Egypt because you think you're going to have peace and because you think you'll have plenty. But he says, I have news for you. The war is moving from this place down there because Nebuchadnezzar is going to take Egypt, which he did. Verse 17, they did cry there, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, is but a noise. He is past the time appointed. You can't depend on Pharaoh any longer. Egypt had gone down. And the prophecy he gives here now in verse 19 of chapter 46, O thou daughter dwelling in Egypt, furnish thyself to go into captivity, for Memphis shall be waste and desolate without an inhabitant. You made a big mistake in trusting Egypt instead of trusting the Lord and believing Him and obey Him. Now you have a marvelous prophecy here in verses 27 and 28. But fear not thou, O my servant Jacob, and be not dismayed, O Israel, for behold, I will save thee from afar off, and thy seed from the land of their captivity, and Jacob shall return, and be in rest and at ease, and none shall make him afraid. Verse 28, how anyone that can believe God is through with the nation Israel and say at the same time they believe the word of God, I don't see how you can read verse 28 and make a statement like that. And maybe that the problem has been they haven't been reading verse 28, so I'm going to read it. Fear thou not, O Jacob, my servant, saith the Lord, for I am with thee. For I will make a full end of all the nations whither I have driven thee, but I will not make a full end of thee, but correct thee in measure, yet will I not leave thee wholly unpunished. God says, I'll punish you, but I'll never make an end of you. So you take this at face value or not. Now you have prophecies against those surrounding nations that this little remnant left. They began to look to one nation after another. Where should they go? Who should they depend on? And some of these were enemies. But now there's not only a prophecy against Egypt, but against these, against Philistia, the Philistines, Tyre and Sidon. We have a prophecy in chapter 47. In view of the fact we'll be coming to them later, why, I move on. And then you have a prophecy in chapter 48 against Moab. Now, Moab has ceased to be a nation. In verse 42, I read, and Moab shall be destroyed from being a people, because he hath magnified himself against the Lord. Now, the Heshemite kingdom of Jordan today, on the east bank of the Jordan River, occupies the same land that the country of Moab and the people of Moab occupied. And yet God is not through with those people. I don't know where they are today. I doubt whether anyone could locate them. but God could locate them. Verse 47, yet will I bring again the captivity of Moab in the latter days, saith the Lord. Thus far is the judgment of Moab. In other words, there's no use these people fleeing to Moab. They wouldn't get any help there.